Today at Reader's Corner, Erica Forensic shares her thoughts on her gripping literary thriller, Into the Jungle. I'm Bob Custer, and welcome to Reader's Corner. In Erica Forensic's hypnotic, violent, and unsparing thriller, named by the New York Times Book Review as one of the summer 2019's best thrillers, a young woman leaves behind everything she knows to take on the Bolivian jungle. But her excursion abroad quickly turns into a fight for her life. To survive, Lily must navigate the jungle, its wonders as well as its terrors, using only her wits and resilience. Primal, gripping, and often terrifying, Into the Jungle features Erica Forensic's signature visceral white-knuckle prose. Erica Forensic is a graduate of the MFA program in creative writing at Boston University. Her work has appeared in Salon and the Boston Globe, as well as on NPR. She is also the author of The River at Night, a number one Oprah Winfrey pick, which Miramax is now adapting for the big screen. In the interest of social distancing, I'm hosting this program from home, and Erica joins us by Skype. Please forgive any audio quality issues. Erica Forensic, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you so much for having me. This is quite thrilling.
Ever since I read your book, Erica, I've been looking so forward to this interview. I can't remember when I read a novel that seemed to become so much a part of me. And that's saying something, since I've never had one inkling of interest in traveling to the Amazon, but I felt I was right there alongside of you all the way, or perhaps I should say right alongside your protagonist. So I guess the first question has to be, how did the Amazon jungle make its way into your plans to write a novel?
Well, it made its way in the usual strange way, which is just by chance. And, you know, I was talking to a friend, her name is Pamela Rickenbach, and I asked her, what you ask a new friend, where did you grow up? And she said, I grew up in the Amazon. And I was like, hold the phone, you know. And she said she was a 16-year-old kid. She was a foster kid, went from bad family to bad family for her anyway, and ended up with a Bolivian family, moved down to Bolivia with them, learned Spanish. She fell in love with a Bolivian man, and followed him back to his extremely remote jungle village where she stayed for the next 10 years of her life. So think about that. She stayed from when she was 16 years old to 26 years old, you know, the formative years of her life. And she proceeded to tell me what happened. And I just was so inspired by that. And I think one reason I was inspired was because I did not have it as bad as she did, but I had a pretty troubled upbringing. I went to Europe for a couple of years by myself when you could do that for $5 back in the 80s, you know. Did some dangerous, sort of naive things, you know. So I guess that's how I related enough to her story in order to leap off from her story and tell, you know, Lily Bushwald's story, you know.
So was the next step to sit down and start writing a novel, or at least an outline, or is the next step to figure out a way to get to the Amazon?
Well, I think the next step is to figure out, you know, as a novelist, I feel like every day I have a great idea, and then the next morning I wake up with thinking that's the dumbest thing I ever thought of. So it takes a while to, you know, vet an idea so that it has, you know, legs. It has to be something that I feel an affinity for, that I feel like I can actually do. I mean, I went into this thing knowing absolutely zero zip about the jungle. But to write the book, I had to figure out the storyline. I had to figure out the characters, just like any other book I'm trying to write. But then I had to go to the jungle to see it for myself. So,
well, that's what fascinates me. Let's talk a little bit about that. And by the way, as our listeners know, when we're talking about the work of a novelist, we want to be careful not to give away the plot. This especially is a book every reader deserves to read to come up on those last pages of suspense. It's one of the most exciting endings I think I've read in a long time. We don't want to give that away, but in the meantime, we do want to give away what you did to prepare for the book. So how'd you go about getting to the Amazon? And you chose to go through Peru when, in fact, the novel is about Bolivia. So maybe you can help us understand how that works.
Well, I mean, like I said, I didn't know anything about the jungle. I read 29 books I watched every movie I could get my hands on. I interviewed my friend for countless hours. And I kept saying, you know, I need to go to the jungle. I need to go to the jungle. Well, you know, the Amazon rainforest encompasses 2.2 million square miles. You know, so you have to be a little more specific. But I wanted to stay somewhere where I felt like I could get what I needed. I needed a guide, you know, I needed someone who could answer the questions I had. I needed to feel as safe as I could, given everything I knew. You know, it's kind of a miracle my husband let me go. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But I chose this place, Amazonia Expeditions, because I talked to a bunch of people and they said, this is a great place. You'll really be embedded. You'll be able to find out what you need to know. And I did. I learned so much there. You know, of course, I saw a lot of the things that I read about in the books, but then I found amazing things that, you know, I never would have expected. I had a conversation with my guide and I said, aren't you scared? I mean, there's 30-foot anacondas out there. They're poisonous centipedes, probably in my room. And he said to me, well, I don't know how you deal with snowstorms. Yeah, like, aren't you terrified? I mean, what happens when it's so, how do people survive that? You know, so he had just this image of we're all outside freezing to death. So exactly, everything is very, you have to analyze your danger, just not unlike today's situation, you know?
So Erica, share with our listeners one thing that I heard you say in one of your interviews about a night trip in a canoe that happened to make its way into your novel. And there were a number of creatures that night, and I'm a fisherman, and I've caught an eel by accident now and then, but the one you ran across, I think, was way different than the one I ran across at the end of my fishing line.
I'm glad to hear that, Bob, because when I was on the night, so there were three trips I could take, you know, with my guide, and they were, well, basically, they're you know, terra firma trips into the jungle, on land, and then there were trips through the floating forest. No, I went between dry and wet seasons. And I don't know if your readers know this, but this is a place that floods 35 feet every year. So try to imagine, you know, getting around 3 months a year by boat from house to house. You can fish out your window. It's very strange. Well, I didn't go during that. I went between seasons, so there was still terra firma, as well as, you know, enough river to get around. But anyway, so there were these night trips, and oh my God, I just had to really steel myself for these, because it was just me and my guide and our headlamps, and, you know, there's 360 degrees of danger. You've got, you know, snakes above you, and then we were, God knows what, below us, and we were coasting along, and out of the water jumps this, like, enormous electric eel, and it just twists around the air. It's as big as a truck tire, and it splashes down. And this is a creature that can stun a horse. This is why I did not go swimming in the Amazon. There were those who did. I just sort of passed on that, you know. Saw tarantulas as big as a dinner plate. So then I saw little kids playing with tarantulas, a certain type of tarantulas, not poisonous, and they kind of have them as pets, you know. You come in with all these expectations and fears, and then you just see how people deal with them and live with them in harmony, you know?
Let's talk about your protagonist, Lily Buchwald. Lily is taken by Omar, her lover, into the jungle to the town of Ayachero, and I believe that's how you pronounce it. And then they also happen upon a tribe called the Tatinga, which is not in the same community, but you do manage to visit it later. Now that makes Ayachero, Omar's town, look like New York City.
Yeah, Ayachero. Yeah, it's a fictional town. I didn't want to get in trouble by using an actual town. I didn't want to be beholden to... I sort of did the same thing with my debut novel, The River at Night, which is about women who go whitewater rafting in northern Maine and lose the raft and have to survive. I used a combination of real places and made up places because I just I believe the important part of the story is not fact-checking, in my case anyway. The important part is being swept up into the story. But at the same time, I need to be respectful, you know. So I made up my own tribe, the Tatinga. And, you know, they are sort of reflective, you know, of many, many tribes that still exist and that are being driven to extinction right now by poachers, land-hungry, you know, corporations, and so on. You know, and not to mention the fires.
That's what I wanted you to comment on, and you did. And by the way, I Googled the Tatinga tribe, and it comes up as a tribe down in the Amazon, albeit a tribe in your book.
Oh, I'm in trouble now. Maybe because I created it, and now it's searchable. I don't know.
You give a shout out in your acknowledgments to a shaman, Adolfo. It wasn't exactly clear to me why he gets credit here. Could you help us understand the role of a shaman in the Amazon jungle and what Adolfo did for you in helping you put this book together?
He was this amazing guy that just gave me so much time. I had one of my requests to my guide was I just really wanted to interview a shaman. And so my guide said, well, you know, he doesn't have a phone, he doesn't have this, and he's, you know, deep in the jungle, so I really need to tell this one guy who's going to go hunting and going to go see him that we're going to go and visit him. Well, anyway, long story short, we did this whole trek in the jungle one morning, and he wasn't there. So it's a very odd feeling to be stood up by a shaman, I'll tell you. We went back the next day, and he gave me 4 hours of his time. What is it like to be a shaman? How do you train for this? What are some amazing cures? What are some cures that you have here? And he brought out like 40 bottles of different concoctions and showed them to me. One of them, of course, was ayahuasca, which is a famous hallucinogenic drug. I did not partake. I was in no place to do that. I was by myself. I mean, anyway. But he gave me such background about how he trained. I mean, he spent a year alone in the jungle. His father was a shaman. His grandfather was a shaman. His great-grandfather. I said, what about your son? What is he want to do? And he said, my son is a DJ in Iquitos. You know, so it's not exactly a thing I think that's going to stick around much longer. And he just gave me the flavor of it. He also did a curing ceremony on me and was sort of eerily able to tell me some things that I was thinking about, which I thought was kind of a touch supernatural. So, yeah, he gave me the flavor.
You're listening to Erica Forensic, author of Into the Jungle. Why don't we pause here, and instead of talking about the Amazon and your trip, let's move on to the plot of the novel. And I'd like you to help our listeners understand Lily Bushwald and Omar. Set it up for us. And like I said, we're going to be very careful not to spoil the plot. What goes on down the road must stay for the reader to discover for himself or herself. But tell us what we're going to be reading about.
So it is about a young woman who is really been sort of beat up by life, and she's looking for a home, although I don't know how conscious she is of that. She follows her Bolivian family, her Bolivian foster family to Bolivia, and falls in love with Omar. Now, Omar is from a long family of jaguar hunters. And it is a skill. It is a skill to hunting is a skill, and hunting jaguars is a sort of very special skill. Anyway, his cousin was killed by a jaguar, and he is in the novel. He's tasked to go back to Ayacucho to hunt this jaguar, and this is right at the point where Lily is madly in love with him. And I don't know what you did for love when you were 19, but I would have done anything. And that's what she did. She followed him. She followed him to this place with no electricity, no running water, a subsistence society where she had to, you know, she's a white woman, American, trying to be accepted by people who have been, you know, abused by white poachers and oftentimes white missionaries. And so she has to somehow survive. But she's also surviving shocking wildlife and encounters with howler monkeys who steal her backpack, all kinds of things. And in the end, she does get sick and she has to save herself, basically. And she saves herself by what she's learned in the jungle. And, you know, as a foster kid, her way of taking care of a bad situation is running away. But this is the first place she's come to where she cannot run away. She has to stay. She has to figure it out. So I wanted to see what this character would do. And she does it, but we're not going to say how.
Well, what really impressed me was the way you were able to insert the botany, the zoology, the science of the Amazon into your novel. And that in itself must be quite a challenge, because you don't want to overwhelm the novel with information that makes it sound like a textbook on biology. But at the same time, you want to make this interesting for the reader. You have this long list of books you read to bring the Amazon to life in your book.
I think just the struggle, because, you know, research is, for me, that's a great point, by the way, you know, because first of all, research for me is so seductive. When, you know, if I'm interested in something, that's all I want to do. And then you turn around and say, okay, where's the story? You know, and then how does whatever you figured out relate to your story? And so what I did is I read all those, you know, 30 books, and I created a document that, a searchable document where I could find information that I needed as I went along, which I can't tell you how tedious that was. I mean, you know, it really was a process of figuring out. I mean, the most important thing, you know, and writers everywhere know this, novelists especially, what you need to know your story. Otherwise, you're going to get lost. And I did struggle, Bob. I really did. Thanks for saying that. I get struggled so hard to not, you know, be tedious and not be didactic about the jungle and about the science and the animals and the plants. And hopefully I didn't overwhelm the story.
I felt very good about the way you balanced the two. And in looking at the list of novels you read, and what I usually do when I read a novel like this, I tend to go off and learn more about the subject. I'm looking at this list, and I don't expect you to recall everything about these books off the top of your head, but is there anything that jumps out as the next step for a reader who wants to learn more about the Amazon? This book by Ed Stafford named Walking the Amazon. This guy walked through the Amazon for 856 days. That must be quite a yarn.
I mean, you know, I did not do that. But he did not take any river, you know, access or anything like that. He was determined. Let me tell you the ones that I think are amazing. Well, they're, I mean, you know, they all have their whatever. But so a local author here, Cy Montgomery, her books, she's a science writer that's so accessible, so fantastic. She wrote Journey of the Pink Dolphins. Another terrific book, Mother of God by Paul Rosalie. That will curl your hair. And then another nonfiction book, The River of Doubt by Candace Millard, quite famous author. You know, and of course I read for fiction Euphoria by Lily King, State of Wonder, Ann Patchett, Ruthless River by Holly Fitzgerald. Now here's a woman in Ruthless River. She was in an actual plane crash in the jungle and had to survive. What a story. So plenty of books for you to get started with.
And we've interviewed Candace Millard and Ann Patchett at Reader's Corner. So we have some of those, but I don't think we have the specific books you mentioned. So that's clearly something that we will want to do for sure. So your novel really does visit a corner of the world that's been victimized by colonialism and avarice and destruction of the Amazon's natural resources. And you have some bad guys in this novel that exemplify what's going on down in the jungle. I wonder if you could tell us more about what the specifics are. What are people trying to get out of the Amazon these days? What did you learn from your trip that embeds itself in the novel? I think mahogany comes to mind. Share that with our listeners.
Well, cutting down of mahogany trees and the way you do that. I mean, In the book, I talk about a mahogany grove, and that's a bit of a fib, because really there are no groves of things in the jungle, because the way the jungle survives is because one reason it survives is the interdependence of the plants and animals, and in order for it to do that, it's best if different kind of mahogany trees next to a ceiba tree, which is next to another kind of tree, because they're all interdependent. So cutting down, mahogany trees can destroy a forest. And also, if you're going to have cattle, to have cattle roaming, or to plant corn or whatever, it is a ridiculous destruction. I mean, some say, it'll take 55 years for the forest to grow back. Well, it took 55 million years for this kind of biodiversity to exist in the first place. So, but these poachers, they were out for any kind in the book. They were out for any kind of rare animal. You can sell macaw feathers, a very beautiful bird, rainbow colored feathers. You can sell those in the black market, all kinds of rare wild animals. I mean, which is quite in the news right now. But then there are, these dredges out there still dredging for gold and so on, dumping chemicals in rivers, destroying hundreds of square miles of ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So it just goes on all levels, this sort of greed, human greed that we're all fighting against.
You're listening to Erica Forensic, author of Into the Jungle, which one reviewer called a death-defying Bolivian adventure in the primordial forest. Let's talk about magic. The prologue of your novel deals with the magic of the jungle in that you have a dream. Or excuse me, Lily, your protagonist, has a dream of an anaconda wrapping itself around her legs, and then Omar shows up. She wakes up and he explains he actually killed an anaconda that night. And you can fill in the rest of the story. But more importantly, my question is, what magic is there in the jungle? You did see some things, I believe, or experience some things where people can literally call birds out of the sky. Perhaps that's magic?
Yeah, so in the beginning, Lily has this dream. Though it's the prologue, it actually takes place about halfway through the book. She's been in the jungle about 4 months, and she has this dream, and she doesn't know whether it's real, but she feels this anaconda wrapping itself around her feet and then her knees and then her almost to her belly, and she wakes, and that night, as you said, Omar comes home, and he reads her face and says, "What's wrong?" And he says, "I killed an anaconda last night," and he said, "Are you okay?" Because anacondas mate for life and they hold a grudge. So, Lily, it was a dream. However, she had bruises on her body, so she couldn't explain those things. It's funny. I was, my publisher or my editor was talking about, okay, so you've got some supernatural elements here. And I was like, what supernatural elements? I guess that's coming from someone who's, kind of embedded herself in this place. There is a book called Amazon Beaming by Petru Popescu, and it's about a man who embedded himself in the jungle. He actually witnessed something called, I call it something different in my book, but a form of telepathy between these tribal members. And, this is not a book that's a light book or a fluffy book or a goofy book. This really happened, and it's very well documented. I did see someone call an eagle out of the sky. I mean, we do that with raptors now. I mean, you can go to New Hampshire and you can go to these places and these where they keep these birds, and you can watch them whistle and the bird will come back to you. So it's not that crazy. It's really not that crazy. Yeah. And these shamans swear they speak to each other. I don't know. I believe there's so much more that we don't know than we know. It's just ridiculous. So this is not a book that's all like, ooh, airy fairy. But it's kind of reporting what I've seen, what I've read, to the extent that it fits with the story. You know, does that answer your question?
It does. It does. So one other aspect of the book that I thought was really interesting, there's a fellow in the book with a rather strange name, and you can share that with our listeners in a second, but he's talking to Lily, and he's talking about what I'm going to pronounce as Kaha, and he is actually from the Tatinga tribe. Would you help us understand what's the significance of Kaha in the real Amazon or in your novel?
Well, it's a made-up term. His name is For God's Sake. And he is a member of the Tatinga tribe who has acclimated himself to his setting. And his setting is sort of, he's a member of, you know, many diff four different worlds. One of his worlds is he, you know, to make money, he went off to a nearby town and worked at a radio station where he talked so much. He was told 1,000 times, "For God's sake, shut up. We're trying to work here." So we took on the name For God's Sake. So that's his name. Anyway, so he talks about something called Ka. It's called Ka. And it's not, I made up the word. I've heard of the concept before. I can't remember the original word for it, but it's your purpose. Like, why are you here? What is your Ka? You know, and your purpose should have reason and sense and integrity, and it's your higher calling, I guess. You know, what is my ka today, and how will I do my best, you know, in all situations. So anyway, Lily, as the protagonist, a young woman, and he asked her, you know, "What is your ka?" You know, and she's like, "I don't know, I'm 19, I'm in the jungle, I'm, you know, I'm lost here." And for God's sake, you know, encourages her throughout the book to try to figure it out, you know. You don't have to figure everything out, but you're never too young to start. So he was a great influence on her. Had his own problems, for sure.
So let's close with the most unusual ending. Because I'm absolutely fascinated by the fact that you chose the Tatinga as this Amazon tribe, and when I Google it, I actually come up with a number of photos of this tribe, and it has Tatinga on it. And what I think might be going on here is that Erica Forensic has had a significant impact on Google's search engine. Although there may not be a real Tatinga tribe, there is now because of you. This looks very real. In looking at images for Tatinga, the Amazon tribe, there's this load of photos, as it turns out, but they're not really the Tatinga tribe. These are photos of real tribes, and there are also photos of you during your jungle visit. So you've made a remarkable impact on Google, not to mention all the books you will sell.
Well, I can tell you in 20, what was it? Like 2015, when I started the book, there were no such things online. I mean, I really struggled to, like, what would be a name that really sounds real, you know, but isn't. And I can't wait to just, you know, check it out.
Let's do one final question about your previous novel, The River at Night. It's been optioned for a movie. I think it's Miramax that's going to be doing it. Where are we on that, and where are they on that? What can we expect to see?
Well, as far as I know, they're writing the screenplay, and it's, you know, quote, in development. So, you know, you've heard all the horror stories. Oh, it's been in development for 20 years, or, you know, but I really think and hope that that's not going to be the case. I think with everything going on, there might be some delays, but yeah, I'm super excited about that. I'll be really excited when a star is attached. I mean, I certainly have my wish list somewhere. I don't know where I put it, but you know, Sandra Oh, if you're out there, would be a great person to be in it. Daryl Hannah, yeah, that's where I am with that. But you know, I'm just working on my next book. I don't live in the past, man. You know what I'm saying?
Right. What's your next book?
Oh, the next book, I actually took a trip to Greenland to research this book. 3 weeks in Greenland. That was frightening in its own way. It was
Oh, yeah.
very beautiful. But the book is called Girl in Ice, and it's about an American linguist who is tasked to go to this very, very remote climate research station off the coast of Greenland, where they have found a girl frozen in the ice, and she's thawed out alive. speaking a language no one understands. So that's what I'm working on. And it's a thriller. It's a murder mystery. So I've gone Great. From hot to cold, Bob. Real cold.
People don't have to wait to see the movie The River at Night. It's in book form, obviously. And that is, again, The River at Night by Erica Forensic. And we've been talking to Erica Forensic about her newest novel, Into the Jungle, and then one down the road called The Girl in Ice. We will be talking to you again on that one, Erica. But for now, thanks for joining us today at Reader's Corner.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.